Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum.
Hoosier fans, it's Indiana basketball time. IU basketball mini-series tickets are now available in six-game or three-game ticket packages, as well as individual games. This is your chance to check out the Hoosiers inside beautiful Simon Scott Assembly Hall. For more information, call or text 812-855-4006 or visit iuhoosiers.com. Go IU!
On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich is here, and we take a look back. We start by taking a look back at the Central Arkansas and Jacksonville games and discussing our biggest takeaways from those games. Then I ask Alex a few FAQs that I've been getting, frequently asked questions from Indiana fans, just to see if Alex has any updates on them. And then we take a look back in more of a macro sense at the last calendar year. In terms of Indiana basketball, you know, where this team was at the end of 2017 as the calendar turned to 2018, and now a year later as the calendar gets ready to flip from 2018 to 2019, what kind of growth have we seen in the program over the past year? Because if you look at where Indiana was in terms of their KenPom rating as 2017 ended, as we started to get into 2018, and where Indiana is now, the growth has been sizable, and a lot of really, really good things have happened in the past year that I think should make you feel good about where the program is at. And so we discuss all of those, go into detail about those, and then talk about some other issues as well, especially what we've seen from Juwan Morgan and Romeo Langford and what we expect from those two terrific players moving forward. All of that and more on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink. Before we get to all of that, real quick, a message from our sponsor, Homefield. This week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, as have so many of our recent editions of Podcast on the Brink, brought to you by Homefield. And at homefieldapparel.com, you will find the comfiest and the most unique licensed IU apparel anywhere. Homefield was started by an IU grad, and all Homefield apparel is designed and printed out of Indianapolis. And with the Big Ten season upon us, you should check out Homefield's IU Basketball Champions Tee. It features IU's five championship years, a feat that, of course, no other Big Ten school has accomplished. And I will continue to plug the Tri-Blend Fleece hoodie, even though it's not on this week's copy points. I'm going to plug it anyway because I love it. And last night, I walked out from the back room. My wife had just finished doing the laundry, and what is she wearing but my Tri-Blend Fleece hoodie? She's not an IU fan. I mean, she is an IU fan just because of me, but she went to Texas A&M. So she was wearing it just because it was comfortable. And that's what she said. She's like, this is so comfortable. The inside of this is amazing. And I was like, yes, yes, it is. And I really wanted to wear it, but I didn't have the heart to ask her to take it off. So it's just, it's that comfortable. And if you're an IU fan like I am, and like I know you are if you're listening to the show, you'll love the cool vintage logo that is on that sweatshirt and on all of the other IU gear at homefieldapparel.com. So make sure you check them out, homefieldapparel.com. And don't forget to use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, at checkout, and you will get 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. Homefield, wear one for the team. All right, and here now is my conversation with Alex Bozich. All right, well, the Hoosiers have played a couple of games. It seems like a long time ago that Indiana played a couple of games, but they have played a couple of games since the last time that we convened here on Podcast on the Brink, Alex. And so, well, you and I want to spend the majority of this episode kind of taking a big picture look back at the last calendar year and what's gone right, what's gone wrong for Indiana. Let's start with just last week, the two games that we saw, Central Arkansas, Jacksonville. Neither team obviously very good. We didn't expect to learn a ton from either one of those games, but what were your biggest takeaways from each of those ball games?
Well, you know, I guess the thing that really stands out to me, obviously the Juwan Morgan triple-double was notable from the Jacksonville game, because those only happen, what, once every 47 years for IU basketball? Or yeah. Hasn't happened for 47 years. It was actually shocking to me when I saw the stat that there's only been two Now two triple doubles in program history. You would have thought that with all the great players that have come through the program, at some point somebody would have notched a triple double. But
that previous one was with blocks. It wasn't even with assists, which is the traditional way that those are gotten.
Yeah, you got the feeling early in that game that it was going to be a great night for Juwan Morgan. I wondered if he could get there with the assist, but it was kind of notable that I think didn't he get the assist first?
Or I think so.
Maybe it was the rebounds or assists. I know he got the points, I think, last. But yeah, I mean, that was notable. The other thing was the turnovers, I think, at least to an extent. Indiana against Central Arkansas, turnover percentage of 16.3, and Jacksonville 16. I made note of that in the Jacksonville, I think it was, five takeaways. That, the turnover numbers obviously as a whole aren't completely where Indiana wants them to be, but they're inching down. I think they're 238th in the country right now, 20.1. I think I've mentioned a couple times, I think a key moving forward is for this team to kind of reach its potential offensively is that number continuing to go down, because for as much as we've talked about Romeo's struggles shooting three-point shots, this team overall is actually not a bad three-point shooting team. Now, they don't take a lot of threes, but they're 37%, which is 63rd national. I mean, that's a number you can work with if you're shooting over 60% on twos. Now, I don't think that number is going to hold up to the two-point shooting that high once Big Ten play rolls around, but I think the turnovers were notable, kind of a takeaway from the last two games. And then, obviously, the defense continues to be outstanding, holding Central Arkansas, I think it was the 0.272, and then Jacksonville 0.86 points per possession. So two stellar defensive performances. Now, not great competition, but I think overall this team has put together a solid body of work so far defensively. Seth made a pretty good note about kind of where the team is from a defensive perspective compared to last season and his takeaways from non-conference play. So really, I mean, those games. The Central Arkansas game, unfortunate that Rob Fennessy got hurt. I think the goal to getting through those games was kind of to keep everybody healthy, get some guys that maybe didn't get to play as much some time on the court. And for the most part, it doesn't sound like Fennessy's injury at this point is going to be too long-term of a problem. So I think Indiana accomplished what it wanted to in those two games.
And in Rob's absence, Devontae Green got a lot more time out there. And to me, that was the other big takeaway from those two games, was kind of Devontae Green's resurgence. Now, he's going to need to do this against better competition, of course. And we've seen it because he did it, last year in Big Ten play. There toward the end of the year, he played much better. But, seeing him have 11 assists to only four turnovers, especially, in the four turnovers, especially given how many possessions he was in charge of the basketball, I thought that was a really good number. He added six rebounds per game in those two games. And obviously in the Central Arkansas game, he shot much better than he did in the Jacksonville game. But I just thought from him, we continued to see what I think is a pretty obvious maturation in terms of his decision making. Now, he's still, pulling up for a long two every now and then, or trying to make a home run pass every now and then that, maybe you wouldn't want him to. But I also feel like these last few games, there's been that moment where you kind of think he's about to make a decision where you're like, no, Devontae, don't do it. Don't make that pass. And he'll back it out and kind of be a little bit more conservative, be a little bit more patient and make the better decision. And I think that's a really interesting development, because if he becomes that kind of player and these couple of games are a harbinger for what he can do in Big Ten play, he really adds some depth and some dynamism to Indiana's backcourt. And obviously that's important if anybody gets hurt, but even if when the team is at full strength, if he's doing that either in a starting role, off the bench, whatever it ends up being, that's really going to be big for this team. So we'll have to wait and see how much this carries into Big Ten play, but I thought that was pretty encouraging to see.
Yeah, and just looking at his last three games, Jacksonville State, Central Arkansas, and Butler, obviously, which is a legit opponent, he's had 16 assists and five turnovers. That's, I think, encouraging. Those are numbers you can obviously work with going forward if he can kind of make that more of the norm rather than the exception. Also, six steals in that stretch. He shot it well from 3-point range. I think he's 8 of his last 16. So that's pretty darn good.
He's up to 36.4% now for the season, which is
Right. His assist rate is solid, 25.6. Now the turnover rate's 25.1, but yeah, I think he's I notice in certain instances now where he would have kind of tried to make a home run play, a lot of times now he's kind of pulling up. It's especially noticeable when I use playing offense in front of its own bench, and I think Archie Miller's right there where he can hear him clearly.
To
pull the ball out and make a better decision. He's doing that more often now, so hopefully it's a sign of things to come for him.
Let me ask you real quick. I know some of the questions that people are thinking about, so let me just kind of fire these off to you, and you tell me if you have anything on any of them. The status of Jerome Hunter and Race Thompson and Keon Brooks recruitment. Has there been anything new to add to either one of those, or are we basically just in a holding pattern with where we were before?
Well, Jerome Hunter, I've kind of said for a long time that I'd be surprised if he played this season. I think the longer this goes without him, showing any signs of being close to a return, I don't know that you want to throw him into the mix in late February or something like that and burn a whole year of eligibility. So I would be surprised at this point if he plays this season. Now, I know there's been no formal announcement, so it's kind of a wait and see. That's just kind of my read on that situation. Race Thompson, I would say, is coming along nicely because now he's actually sitting on the bench for games, whereas before he was kind of in and out in terms of showing up and actually being at games. So that tells me that he's adjusting well to kind of being in louder atmospheres and kind of being in the arena for games. So that would, obviously he's played this season, so Indiana's going to want to get him back and on the court at some point if they can. I don't know how much of a role he's going to have. It's kind of, I think he's played one game. We talked about this a little bit last show, but I think he's played one game this season. So it's not really going to be easy to get him back in the mix, but even just having him back and available for practice and things like that, I think is going to be helpful. And then Keon Brooks, I think we're just in a holding pattern there. I mean, I would say getting closer to decision, but hasn't really put a firm timetable on anything. And I know he was out in Hawaii playing in a tournament with his La Lumiere team over the holidays. And so maybe when he gets back, or, I don't know if he's back yet, but I would say that he would be getting closer to making a decision. But he hasn't put a firm timetable on anything, but I would say, I wouldn't be surprised if we hear something in the next couple weeks to month.
One more question for you before we look back at the last year. Armand Franklin, you posted some new highlights about Armand Franklin on InsideTheHall.com earlier. I was actually just getting ready to watch them before you popped on in Zoom, so I haven't had a chance to check them. But I've been hearing really good things about his play his senior year and the improvement that he's made. What have you kind of seen from him so far this year?
Yeah, the video is actually his last three games. I was able to get footage of all three games, and the last one was actually against Castle, who has Alex Hemingway is going to Clemson. So probably an Indiana All-Star, and then the other two games, Indianapolis Tech was one of them, and the other one was West Lafayette. So not the greatest of competition, but
hey, I went to West Lafayette. Don't disparage okay. Coach Wood and the Red Devils.
Even though
they did kill him.
Okay. So the thing that stood out to me was in the Castle game, he had a couple of plays where he just kind of finished with authority at the rim. One, he went baseline and just kind of went up over people and dunked the ball, which is, I know he's a guy that can do that, but it just kind of surprised me to see him do that kind of in traffic situation. And then his three-point shooting is obviously his range. If you watched the video a couple weeks ago against Zionsville, where he really kind of lit it up in the first half from three-point range, I think he's shooting a pretty good percentage too. So I think that's got to be music to the ears of Indiana fans who are looking for, obviously, more shooters in the program. I think Armand Franklin's going to bring a lot from that regard. So somebody made an interesting comment in the forum this morning that they're kind of getting a Rob Fennessy kind of feel from Armand. And I can see that in terms of just the steady progression. Now, I don't know that he'll have the same type of impact as a freshman, but I think he's going to be another solid four-year player that Indiana fans are going to look back on. He's not the same pedigree in terms of a recruit as a Keon Brooks or a Trace Jackson Davis in terms of the ranking, but I think when you can sprinkle in a guy who is going to play for your program, most likely for four seasons, and just be a steady presence. He's going to be, I think, a really important guy moving forward.
Hey, I'm going to jump in here real quick to talk about tickets for a moment. As you know, getting tickets online can be far too complicated. There are hundreds of sites with varying levels of reliability, and that makes it hard to know who to trust, which is why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so that you can easily find the seats that you want for a price that you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. The way that SeatGeek does this is they search multiple ticket sites, and they grade every ticket based on value. So that helps you know immediately, you know, whether you have the app or you go to the desktop site, whatever, when you open up SeatGeek, you can immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Make sure that you're getting value for your dollar. That's really helpful. And this is huge, every purchase is fully guaranteed. So you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And I know that this works because we've had issues where people who listen to this show and the assembly call, you have had something come up with a ticket. It's rare. But SeatGeek has always taken care of it to basically beyond that person's level of, you know, satisfaction, what needed to be done. And that always gives me a lot of confidence in recommending SeatGeek to you. So all of those reasons and more are why you should check out SeatGeek. That's why I check out SeatGeek. I have the app. I use it. You know, we want to go to concerts or, you know, pick up sports tickets here in town. My wife and I, that's what we use. And again, that's why I recommend them to you, because it's what I use as well. And best of all, since you're a listener to Podcast on the Brink, you can get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So download the app, enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K today. That's promo code BRINK, and you will get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to my conversation with Alex Bozich. All right, so let's take a look back, Alex, at what has gone on with this program over the past year. And obviously putting any kind of, you know, endpoint or, you know, specific time frame on what you're looking at can be a little bit arbitrary, you know, so going from January 1st, 2018 to, you know, January 1st, 2019, it is a little bit arbitrary, but I think it can also be a little bit instructive just to kind of see some of the trends, see some of the growth in where the program is. So here's something interesting. In 2018, and obviously we're not to January 1st yet, but Indiana doesn't have any games between now and then. So, you know, whatever their rankings are, they're going to be right around that spot. Last year, at the beginning of 2018, do you remember where Indiana was in KenPom? Off the top of your head?
Beginning of 2018.
Yeah. So last year, and it was after they had played 14 games at that point. So on January 1st, 2018.
I would guess this is just a shot in the dark, somewhere in the 90s.
They were 90th.
Wow.
They were 90th. Yes. They were 90th. Now, you know, you think about where they were. They were 8-6. They had that one win over Notre Dame, obviously, but they had home losses to Indiana State and Fort Wayne. They had five losses by 10 or more, three of those by 16 or more. So they were 90th. Do you know where Indiana is today in KenPom?
24?
24th. So they have made a 66-spot jump in one calendar year. Now, this data only goes back to the 2010-2011 season in KenPom, where they will actually show you what a team's KenPom rank was, like at each game, at each step of the way in the season. Before that, you can only see what it was at the end of the year. So do you think that there have been any one, like year-over-year, calendar-year jumps in that time frame that are comparable to this?
Like for any team or just for IU?
No, just for Indiana. In the last, I guess it would be, what, 9 years? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, in the last 9 years.
Maybe in the opposite direction.
there have been a few that weren't good. Yes.
I mean, I would say 2013-14 would be one that would be from the opposite standpoint of a huge dive.
Yep, they were first in 2013, and by that point in 2014, they were 47th. They finished that year 63rd. So things actually got worse. But if you go back to the 2011 season, so this was the year before Cody Zeller, Indiana was 73rd on January 1st. And in 2012, they were 8th. That was a jump of 65 spots. So that's the only jump that has been comparable, which to me was surprising because I would have thought that jump would have been a lot bigger. But, you know, I guess, you know, kind of a similar thing. You're adding a five-star prospect in Cody Zeller. He has a big impact. You know, guys like Victor Oladipo get better. you know, somewhat similar here, you know, where obviously Indiana improved last year, but then you add in Romeo Langford this year and you've, you know, that helps get you to that big jump.
So you're saying that they were in the 2010-11 season, they were in the 60s or 70s at this point of the season?
Yep.
That was the year, though, that they went like 3-15 in Big Ten play, right?
Yeah, the bottom really fell out because they finished 82nd in KenPom that year before it got
That's
obviously
crazy
a lot
to
better
me, though,
than
that
year.
They were 82nd in KenPom and they finished 3-15 in Big Ten play. That was like a season, I remember that specifically as when is this season ever going to end? Because it just felt like they were never going to win another game. I remember, I think there was a Wisconsin game in there at one point that they just got drilled on the road. And I was like, this season just needs to end as soon as possible.
Yeah. And it's one of those, we always talk about like the first 3 years of the, you know, of the Korean era and give a total pass. And that kind of feels like one where at the end of that one, really shouldn't get a total pass for that one.
Actually, that season shouldn't have been as bad as it was.
No. Okay. So I found that interesting. Now, yes. here's something else that I found interesting. So if we just go from January 1st, 2018 to now and look at the results that have happened. So basically the second half of last season, the first half of this season. All right. Indiana's record is 19-11, 10-8 in the conference. Okay. These are just games that have happened in the past calendar year. As we said, they're currently 24th in KenPom. One cool thing about Bart Torvik's site, barttorvik.com, is you can put any beginning and end points that you want, and it will tabulate all of the data. So you can actually see from January 1st, 2018 to January 1st, 2019, and it includes NCAA tournament games, but you can get a ranking from those. So it, you know, melds the two seasons together. So if you looked at that as one season, Indiana would be 36th. They're 36th in the T rank with an offensive efficiency of 76th, a defensive efficiency of 15th. Which is obviously quite good and a huge sign of how much better the defense has gotten. The Hoosiers in that time frame, the last calendar year, against Tier A opponents are 2-9. Against Tier B opponents are 8-1. They have 7 top 50 wins. And so I guess my point here in kind of laying this out is basically over the last calendar year, after being at 90th in KenPom, Indiana's essentially been about a bubble team. You know, because those results, 19-11, 10-8 in the conference, about 36th in the computer rankings, about a bubble team, maybe even a little bit better than that, you know, like a 9 seed, a 10 seed, something like that. How does that strike you in terms of improvement from where they were 1 year ago, given everything that's happened? Do you think that's reasonable? Do you think that's a good sign of growth? Do you think it should be better? How does that hit you?
Well, I guess I'm not surprised. I feel like kind of the biggest, and this is going back to, I guess, 2017, I think the most encouraging thing about how Indiana finished last season was basically how, you know, they got blown out in those two home games against Indiana State and Fort Wayne. And then the defense really in Big Ten play, I think, and I don't have it right in front of me, but I think they were the fourth or fifth best defense in Big Ten play last year. And that was with a team that at one point was just getting absolutely shredded up by mid-major teams at home. And so that was the most encouraging thing. 19-11 being in the top 40 and Bart Torvik, and you look at last year's conference play, Indiana didn't really beat anybody all that good in conference play last year. I mean, the record was 9-9, but they didn't beat any good teams. And so that kind of tells you how good they've been this year so far for them to even be that high. They've got a lot of really good wins so far this season, and they have a great resume going into conference play. And that's a question I've got a couple of times now on Twitter is basically, what do you think Indiana needs to do the rest of the Big Ten season just to make the tournament, like minimum? And I feel like their non-conference resume, and this would be something I think Andy will probably get into soon when he starts kind of taking some deeper dives into the bracket stuff, but their non-conference resume, they've really set themselves up. If they can have a great Big Ten season, win 13 or 14 games, I think, to get a top four seed in the tournament. So, I think the number sounds about right. The number you gave me from Torvik, because they've been really good so far this year and the end of last year. I mean, they won some games, but they didn't really beat anybody notable. So that feels about right to me. I probably would have guessed something in that range. And considering, where they were a year ago at this time, you know, I think you have to be excited about the potential of this team. Now, We'll see if they can continue to win close games at the clip that they are right now. I think that's kind of probably the biggest worry on everybody's mind. Yeah. If they keep playing with fire so much, are they going to be able to continue to win close games? But there's plenty of reasons for optimism as we hit the new year.
Yeah, no question. To be where they were last year, and like you mentioned, you know, over the second half of last season, they didn't have a lot of huge wins. But I think what they showed is that they were laying the foundation for, you know, what this year's team could be if they got the influx of new talent. And of course, as the season went along, we didn't know that they would have Romeo Langford. But, you know, you saw Juwan Morgan kind of step into the role of being, you know, being a leading guy. And now that you add Romeo to that, you get, you know, would have been really solid contributions from Robert Phinisee. And that's the other thing. We spent a lot of last year lamenting yet another year with such questionable point guard play. And now, you know, here we sit a year later feeling pretty good about the point guard position moving forward. And the other thing that I didn't mention, you know, that has happened in the last calendar year is 2 5-star commitments. Obviously, the Romeo Langford commitment that really, you know, helped propel this year's team to being a top 25 team now, but also the commitment of Trace Jackson Davis. And so I think the thing to me that has defined the Archie Miller era so far is just steady progress. You know, like it feels like he kind of laid out a vision for what would happen his first, you know, day on the job. And it just feels like, you know, no, maybe there hasn't been some big meteoric victory or some huge thing that has just like, you know, propelled Indiana to, you know, way forward. But it just feels like step after step after step, very methodically, they've just gone about what they've wanted to do, and Indiana just keeps getting better. It's like this kind of relentless improvement, both on the recruiting trail and on the court, that is really, really encouraging, and it makes you feel good about this year's team continuing to improve. Because, yes, even though a lot of the wins have been close, some of the reasons for those wins being close have started to improve. You know, turnovers and free throw shooting, some of those issues. And so you feel good about what this team can do, but then I think in the macro sense, in terms of the program just continuing to improve, you know, you look at some of these trends and you look at how Indiana's gotten to where they are now from where they were, and there continues, I think, to be a lot to feel good about, just in terms of the trajectory and their ability to sustain it. Even after Romeo and Juwan leave, you know, even if there's a dip, you feel good about the overall direction.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is that people want to see, and obviously we don't know if this is going to be the case because we're trying to project to 2 or 3 years down the road. But, you know, in the previous, under the previous coaching regime, Tom Crean, there was these really high seasons, like the 2011-12 and 2012-13 were probably his two best back-to-back seasons. But there was always a backslide after. And it's okay, I think, to have a season where you were maybe aren't as good as the previous year based on your personnel, but it's what's not okay, I guess, in the eyes of kind of where Indiana fans feel they should be. And I agree with the sentiment is you should really never have a season where you're not in contention to make the tournament, or really you should be in the tournament every year. That's just my opinion. I don't know if you share the same opinion, Jared, but
oh yes,
you know, there's 68 teams in the tournament. You've got the resources that you do. And I think the thing that the next, obviously for Archie, he's off to a tremendous start. He's recruited at a very high level. He's done everything that he said he was going to do in terms of getting in-state kids. And obviously there's going to be a lot of pressure on this year's team in the tournament to, you know, at least win a game, maybe get to the second weekend, see where you can go beyond that. I think we can agree that the tournament in many ways is dependent on matchups and kind of where you who you end up against. But the interesting thing to see, I think, going forward the next couple of years is Indiana going to be able to string together any consistency? Because that's what really ended things for Tom Crean, his inability to string together good seasons on top of each other. And I think by Archie building his foundation with in-state kids and defense first mentality gives him a chance to kind of build upon this. Like you said, next year there's probably going to be a step back losing Romeo and Juwan Morgan, but I still think they're going to have a really good team next year again and have a chance to make the tournament. And I think once you get in, kind of, you got to build that culture of, you know, making the tournament every year. I mean, look at what Sean Miller did at Arizona. He kind of came into a tough situation, and every year they've really, I think, made the tournament since he's been there. I don't know if they've missed at all, but after he kind of started making the tournament. And I think that's kind of, you know, that's the tier of program that Indiana wants to get back up into. Like right now, you look around nationally and you say, you know, who are the top 5 or 10 programs, and Indiana is probably not on your list. And I think the step is, the next step is getting in back into that tier. And that's when you give yourself a chance to compete for Final Fours and, you know, get back in the conversation nationally.
Yeah, Indiana's probably on your list if you're talking about, like, if everything's humming perfectly, you know, like top 10 programs in terms of potential. You know, Indiana's still probably there, but when you've missed the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row and the results have been what they have been, no, I mean, Indiana's got to work its way back up there.
Probably not top 30 right now, just based on recent results. I mean, that's just the reality. And I think that's the challenge for Archie, because as good as the highs were under Crean, the lows were just too low for anyone to tolerate. And I think you've got to have at least just like the baseline should be, you know, a 9 or a 10 seed. Like your down year, you should be making the tournament and giving yourself a chance to advance. That should be like the low point. And I think obviously Archie kind of, I think, gets that. His comments recently about being ranked in the top 25 are kind of indicative that he kind of gets, you know, the seat that he's in, right? Like at Dayton, it was fun to be the underdog, and hey, we don't want to be ranked. We want to sneak up on somebody when the bracket comes out. But he realizes that he's the hunted now at IU instead of the hunter. And I think he is embracing that. And quite frankly, any coach who doesn't embrace that doesn't really belong at Indiana.
Well, you know, think about, you know, how things went under Crean. Indiana really seemed to perform their best in an underdog type role. Like, think about all of the big victories. They kind of came in that underdog type role, which is fun, you know, and like it's fun to win as the underdog. But you can't do that long term at Indiana with the expectations that are there. That's just that doesn't mesh. Like, you've kind of got a little window when you're rebuilding something, when you can kind of be the underdog and pull the upsets and all that. But eventually, you know, if you want to be a quote unquote blue blood program and do all the things that IU fans want to do, you have to be comfortable being a top dog year in, year out, and not having many opportunities to upset teams. You know, it's where you're just expected to go out there and win. So I really appreciated hearing that from Archie, because it sounded like he's somebody who maybe understands that mentality and is a little bit more comfortable in those clothes, you know, and that's what's needed for this job.
Right. You look back at like the last 15 years of IU basketball and you ask people, this is a moment that still comes up to me like all the time, like in casual conversations with fans. And you say to somebody, you mentioned like IU being good as the underdog under Crean, but you say, what's the most disappointing moment in the last 15 years? Well, it was the moment where Indiana wasn't the underdog and they were kind of had their chance to be in that seat. The Syracuse game, right? They were the number one seed. They were probably the second or third best team in the tournament. And that was kind of their chance to say, hey, you know, we're actually, you know, I know that everyone printed the we're back shirts, but Indiana was never really back. And that was kind of their chance to get to the Final Four. And everyone, I mean, I think we could do a poll. What's like the most disappointing performance for IU in the last 15 years? And I think that would be easily at the top of the list. You agree?
Oh, there's no question. I'm trying to think of one that would rival it.
No, I mean, there's been embarrassing moments, like the Fort Wayne and the Indiana State. Like losing to Fort Wayne twice was bad. Obviously, there was a lot of different things. But those are
different though, because of the stakes and the stage, and you know, just
that kind of solidifies your point of, hey, you know, it's fun to be an underdog for so long, but at some point, you want to get back to being the team that's consistently thriving when other people are, you know, trying to take something from them. And really, that's really the only moment since that 2002 run to the championship game where Indiana's been kind of the team expected to win in a high stakes situation in the tournament, and they haven't. And they didn't come through. So the hunger for getting back to that, I think, is kind of what continues to drive this fan base. And I think that they're encouraged by Archie's willingness to embrace those situations. But I think we'll see over the next couple of years how he responds when he actually gets in one of those situations.
You know, the other takeaways from the last calendar year, as you look at individual players, you know, Justin Smith ended last year on a high note, but has, you know, kind of struggled with some ups and downs this year. Devontae Green had some nice moments toward the end of last season, has been kind of up and down this year. You know, when you look at it from a player perspective, I think the guy that really stands out is Juwan Morgan, you know, because over the last year, we've really seen him go from a guy that clearly had potential his first couple years and played some key moments and some big games, like really kind of showed you flashes, but never really could find the combination of health and consistent role to really shine. And over the last year, he really has, and has, you know, etched his name into the conversation of one of the, you know, greatest IU players ever. Now, you know, you got to define what you mean by greatest IU players ever. He's not among the top 10 or 15, but I mean, I'd have to go through and look. I think, you know, depending on where he ends up finishing this year in terms of some personal accolades and what the team does, I think he could finish in the top 50, maybe the top 40, you know, all-time IU players, just given how much has been expected of him and how much of a load he's had to shoulder his junior and his senior season. That to me has it's really what has made, especially at the end of last year when, you know, you kind of knew Indiana wasn't really going anywhere, but just on a night in, night out basis, watching him play so well and then seeing what he's done now as a senior, to me it remains the most rewarding part of being a college basketball fan. It's why I like being a college basketball fan, is watching these guys grow and develop, you know, from their freshman year to their senior year. And as it was with Yogi, it has been really, really rewarding watching this four-year evolution of Juwan Morgan from, you know, freshman that, you know, kind of came in toward the end of the year on a Big Ten championship team and had some big moments, to now clearly being the leading man in a resurgent program. And, you know, you mentioned the triple-double, his most recent performance, you know, one of his most impressive individual ones. But he's just, he's continued to impress. And I really look forward to seeing what he does now over the final few months of his college career.
Yeah, I don't know that he is going to end up one of those guys that's on the top, you know, 35, 40 players in IU history. But I think in terms of just for this era of IU basketball, if the Archie Miller, you know, era turns out to be kind of a return to prominence or return to sustained success, a lot of people are going to look back at Juwan Morgan and say kind of he was really the guy that did help get things off the ground, because obviously when Archie came in, he lost James Blackman Jr., OG, and Thomas Bryan immediately to the draft. Those were all expected departures. But Juwan was the guy who really bought in and stuck around and kind of helped turn things around. You know, obviously last season didn't go as everyone would have hoped, but he was really the most consistent bright spot, obviously, along with Rob Johnson, who I think a lot of people will remember fondly, but Juwan has a chance to just kind of be remembered as a guy who offered the program stability in a time where there wasn't a whole lot to hang your hat on, and just a guy who has improved in just so many different ways throughout his 4-year career. You know, I watched him video recently from his freshman season. I was going back and watched I think it was maybe the Maryland game at home that they played, and just how different he looks now. Just the physical maturation, how his game has changed. You know, he wasn't, I mean, now when he gets the ball down in the post, he just kind of bullies his way down there, and just, if it's almost like he's unstoppable when he catches the ball at a certain point. That was not his game at all as a freshman. So just to kind of see his improvement over 4 years has been really fun to watch. And also his Instagram comments are one of a kind. I don't think those will ever be forgotten. Right. I mean, if you're making a list of IU players, in terms of Instagram comments, he's definitely number one.
Yes, he is. The other thing that has really defined the last calendar year of Indiana basketball has been Romeo Langford. First, the pursuit of Romeo Langford last year. You know, you think back, it was January 14th, that Northwestern game that Indiana won 66-46 that Romeo attended. And it really seemed to kind of rekindle, like, hey, Indiana might really have a chance here. You know, Romeo's here in attendance. He's watching this game. Of course, in April, then he commits to Indiana. And now we've gotten to see him for a couple of months. You know, I tell you, I think it was either the Jacksonville game or the Central Arkansas game. I think it was the Jacksonville game when he was kind of out there playing late. And, you know, look, we know how much is expected of him. You know, he's known as a scorer. And I thought it was so impressive to see him come out in the second half of that game. And rather than just kind of hunting for points, which would have been really easy to do in a game that's already decided, you know, prop up your point per game total, go kind of get yours. He just never seems to do that. He just seems to make the right play. And if the right play is to make a pass and set up his teammates, that's what he's going to do. And if the right play is for him to go get a bucket, that's what he's going to do. But it never seems forced or, you know, again, outside of what it should be. And then I think there were about 2.5 minutes left and there's a loose ball and he's hustling after it, you know, and gets it, you know, over a couple of Jacksonville guys who were just standing there. And it just impressed me, just that mentality that he had, that his instinct was, you know, to keep hustling out there. And I've heard, you know, a whisper here or there from, you know, people that are apparently watching different basketball games from what I'm watching, you know, talking about how he doesn't seem bought in or whatever. I haven't noticed that at all. And I think it's absurd, actually, when I hear people say that. And so I've just been really impressed with what we've seen from him so far. And I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on that. And then just what you expect from him over these final few months. Because, you know, we knew that his time at Indiana was going to be, you know, short, just like a kind of a comet coming through Bloomington. What do you expect that we'll see from him individually as his, you know, during his final few months as a Hoosier?
Yeah, I mean, so far, you know, what's stood out to me the most is essentially just kind of how much he's bought into the whole team concept in Bloomington. And you mentioned some of the comments that you've seen people make in terms of, you know, maybe him not, you know, having both feet in the door, whatever it may be. But, you know, the kind of the moment that stands out to me was going back to that shot that Rob Fennessy hit to beat Butler. Romeo's the expression on his face, and he looked as happy as anybody in that situation that Indiana was able to win that game. That kind of told me all I needed to know in terms of where he is with this team and being bought in. The rest of the season, in terms of from an individual standpoint, I mean, his shooting percentage overall is really good, but his three-point shooting percentage is something that could really use some work. And I think that's one thing that the NBA people are going to be watching the second half of the season. Is he going to be able to improve that number? Because there's just not a lot of shooting guards in the NBA that are shooting, 20-21% on threes. So that's something he's going to really have to prove that he can do better. But ultimately, I think the biggest way he can help himself in terms of his draft stock and his future is just be a part of winning basketball, right? The further Indiana can take its season in the tournament, the more exposure not only the program is going to get it, but he's going to get more eyeballs will be on him. And if he's contributing to winning games at a high level, then I think all the other stuff, the accolades are going to come with that. So I think it's great to focus on team stuff first and let everything else come as a result of that.
The other guess observation from the past year has just been, you know, and I mentioned this earlier, that, you know, we spent so much of the last two seasons lamenting the point guard position and, you know, just how far it had fallen after the outstanding play that we got from Yogi in 2016. And I think people were excited about Rob Fennessy and what kind of prospect he was, you know, but maybe not quite sold that he was, you know, an elite point guard for the future. And I suppose we don't know yet that he'll be an elite point guard for the future. But we certainly have seen enough from him over the first part of his freshman season to feel much, much, much better about that position moving forward. Now, obviously, you hope that, and you know Archie will continue to recruit, and you hope to get, you know, more 4- and 5-star prospects in there who can handle the ball. But you feel a lot better about that position with what Rob Fennessy has shown, which I don't think anybody, even the most optimistic Rob Fennessy fans, well, outside of one I can think of, but I don't think many other you know, folks thought he was going to be this good this soon. And that has really probably been the other biggest kind of change from last year at this time to now.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously one of the primary downfalls of Tom Crean era was being unable to replace Yogi Ferrell with at least just a kind of a average to above average player. That was no knock on Josh Newkirk, but he just really couldn't live up to what Yogi Ferrell did, and obviously Rob Finney's probably not going to live up to it, but he's going to offer enough, I feel like, long term for Indiana to have above average to potentially really good point guard play for the duration of his career. And I think it's encouraging that he's shown himself to be a steady presence as a freshman in some really tough spots. I mean, everyone talks about the Butler shot, obviously, but you know, the Louisville game, the Penn State game are examples of him making key plays that you don't often see out of a freshman in the last 10 minutes of a game in tough situations.
It's telling that he was called Big Shot Rob before the Butler game. Like, that kind of solidified it, but that nickname had already started well before that game.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that I've watched since the sophomore year of high school, and it's just, you know, I think the biggest thing with him and Archie Miller is Archie Miller trusts him, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing with your point guard is, you know, they're going to make some mistakes, but more often than not, he's going to make the smart play. He's going to not try to do anything that's kind of out of his outside of his game. He doesn't really throw many crazy passes. He doesn't really take any shots that are ridiculous. I mean, kind of the moment I knew that this season that he was going to be a big factor was the way he played defensively against Marcus Howard. We've seen what Marcus Howard's done since that game.
Yeah,
he's destroyed some really good teams, and Indiana kind of had his number that night, and Rob Finney was a big part of that. So definitely, as you mentioned, I think Indiana will continue to recruit point guards and try to, you know, shore up the position even more going forward. But I mean, it's going to take a really special player to unseat Rob Finney. I feel like in any of the next 3 years, he feels like he's kind of entrenched himself as the point guard in Bloomington for the foreseeable future.
Any other observations from the past calendar year, big kind of macro observations about the program?
Not the program, but I'm kind of just sitting here in shock at where the Big Ten is right now, as opposed to where it was last March.
Oh man.
And I didn't have this feeling coming into the season that the league was going to be this good, but I'm looking at this schedule that Indiana has coming up and kind of, you know, just what this league is going to be like this season, the opportunities for so many teams to make the tournament. And I don't know exactly what it was that kind of built or kind of forced this turnaround. I mean, I think a lot of things obviously happened with, you know, obviously John Beilein's kind of a, you know, one of the, in my opinion, top five coaches right now in college basketball at Michigan. What he's been able to do, Izzo's a Hall of Famer. I think Chris Holtman and Archie doing what they're doing at their respective schools. You know, we've talked a lot about Ohio State and Indiana needing to be good for the Big Ten to kind of reach its potential, the resurgence of Wisconsin, Nebraska being able to keep its, you know, core intact for this season. You just kind of go down the list. I mean, everything, at least to this point for the league, has gone right. Minnesota's better than they were last year because of some health things. Maryland got Bruno Fernando to come back to school and has a chance, I think, at least to make the tournament this year. So, you know, that's really kind of my big takeaway from the year that was, is, you know, the Big Ten, it was down in the dumps last March, and now it's feels like everyone's talking about the league as being kind of at the top of the heap in terms of college basketball. Now, they may not have a team that's going to win the national championship, and that's, you know, a conversation that we have often. When's the next national championship going to come? But I think it's encouraging just kind of how the league has bounced back and responded from last year's March debacle.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like at this time last year, you had two teams people were talking about as possible national title contenders, Michigan State and Purdue, but then just nothing after that. And now this year, you know, Michigan has now, you know, kind of squeezed their way into that conversation with how they have started, although no one, I don't think, really thought of them as a national title contender coming into the season. But you don't have those elite teams. But man, the depth of the conference seems strong. You know, I mean, it just seems like night after night after night, you're going to be playing a good NCAA tournament quality team in the Big Ten. So it is amazing that the conference has had that kind of turnaround just in terms of just the makeup of the conference, you know, going from very top heavy with no depth to just extremely, extremely deep. And, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, seemingly wide open. It's gonna make for a really interesting conference.
Yeah, here. I mean, Michigan State and Purdue were the teams everyone was talking about a year ago at this time, and then Michigan's actually the one that, you know, gets the championship game and gives the conference a chance to actually kind of salvage.
That's true.
Otherwise, what did four Big Ten teams make the tournament last year? Is that right?
Yeah, Ohio State made it too.
Okay, so overall, it was nothing to write home about. And this year, I think we would all be surprised if anything less than seven made it and could see, what, eight or nine?
Yeah, especially with the Pac-12 being so bad.
Yeah, you just hope that the carnage in the middle isn't so bad that everyone ends up like a seven or an eight seed.
Yeah, which could happen, but fortunately, because there were a lot of good wins in the non-conference, that will help. So
right. I mean, I think a lot of people, if Indiana finishes like 11-9 or 12-8 in the Big Ten, they're going to be like, wow, they have a ton of losses. But then you're going to look at the schedule and you're going to say, wow, they lost to a bunch of really good NCAA tournament teams. So I think the league is going to be well-tested when it comes to March. Just hopefully one of these years they can break through and get a national championship again, because I think that's kind of like a weight that's dragging on the conference until it happens again.
One last statistical note that isn't really relevant to anything we've talked about yet, but I find it so amazing. And it just jumps out at me every single time I look at Indiana's KenPom profile. So right now, Indiana, let me get the exact numbers. Indiana is shooting. We've talked about how good Indiana's two-point field goal percentage is. Indiana's shooting 60.4% from two, which is absurd. It's second best in the country. It's driven, obviously, by how great Juwan and Romeo are scoring around the basket. Indiana's free throw percentage is 63.5%. Obviously not as good. Now, your free throw percentage is always going to be better than your two-point percentage unless you're just really, really atrocious from free throw, you know, at the free throw line and really, really good at twos. So that difference, 3.1%. Last year, the difference was 13.2%, which is way more, obviously, than it is this year. But if you start going back in history, there are only a couple of other seasons where that difference is under 20%, and that's only barely. Usually, the difference is much, much more than that. So it's one of those things where you look at that, and the two-point field goal percentage is just out of this world good. The free throw percentage, so disappointingly bad. And, you know, you wonder. You certainly hope. I mean, you look at the way Archie Miller wants to play, and certainly with, you know, the makeup of this team and some of the guys he's recruited for the future, you would expect this to be, you know, be a team that, just with the way the offense flows and smart shot selection, you know, that it'll be a team that will continue to do well in terms of 2-point field goal percentage. But they got to get that free throw percentage up, because you know, as amazing as that 2-point number is, that free throw number is going to become a bigger issue in these closer games, you know, against really good Big Ten competition. So that
they've dodged some bullets when you look at the free throw opponent free throw percentage.
It's even worse.
9.9%.
Yeah.
Look how good. What is the secret to guarding the free throw line so well?
Maybe we're just playing so hard on defense that the other teams are exhausted by the time they get to the line.
There could be something to wearing teams down and having them miss some opportunities, but there's no way that 59.9% is going to continue.
No.
So Indiana needs to get at least to like the high 60s, 70%, I feel like, in Big Ten play.
Well, this is why Indiana improving its turnover percentage and improving its free throw percentage are so important, because you talk about Indiana winning close games. Well, right now, opponents, as you mentioned, shooting under 60% from the free throw line and shooting under 30% from three-point range. Those numbers are unlikely, like very unlikely, to stay there. So you have to expect some of those shots to start going in for opponents, which means that Indiana has to do a better job making their free throws, and they've got to stop giving possessions away, because they're going to need some of those extra possessions as, you know, the other team's numbers start to, you know, kind of regress toward the mean a little bit. So that's definitely going to be a storyline to watch during the second half of the season.
Yeah, their number, their luck number on KenPom is 77th in the country. I think there's only two teams ahead of them that have a, you know, a better number in that statistic. So,
and that statistic basically measures how much better you are performing than what your efficiency margin would dictate. So, right. And you know, a lot of times that's winning close games. Like, I think Kansas has a really high luck number this year,
and Virginia does too.
Yeah, so you know. It's not to say, like, some teams, And some coaches tend to do a little bit better in that because you do better in close games. And Archie Miller is one of those coaches because he's one of the best coaches in close games. But obviously, you know.
But it wasn't that way last year. They were 252 in that last year.
Because they lost
all those. You know, go back, you kind of replay the Purdue game and the Michigan State game at home were like two examples of games that this team probably would have won, and last year's team just wasn't able to pull it out.
And what's the biggest difference? To me, the biggest difference is last year's team did not have a guard who could go get a bucket when you needed one. And this year's team does. You've got Romeo, and you've also got a guy in Rob Phinisee who can step up. You know, now usually, you know, they're playing inside out when Rob gets those shots. He's not always creating them off the dribble, but he can step up and make them. And last year's team just didn't really have that backcourt guy. I mean, Rob played very well in some big games, obviously, but you know, he wasn't necessarily a guy that was going and creating a shot for you when you really needed one at the end of a shot clock against a good defense. This year's team has that.
This stretch of games, you know, the Penn State game, Phinisee had those plays down the stretch in the second half that kind of won them the game. I know they held on there, but without those plays, they don't win. The Northwestern game, I know Romeo made a tough shot down the stretch in the last couple of minutes that kind of, quote-unquote, sealed the game. The Louisville game, Romeo made some plays down the stretch. And then, obviously, the Butler game, Phinisee making that shot. Those are plays that Indiana wasn't making a year ago, and I think that's a big reason why they're winning all these close games, as you mentioned.
Yep. All right, Alex. Well, I hope you had a good Christmas holiday. Hope you have a good New Year's. Any big plans for New Year's Eve? Do you guys blow it out and do anything crazy?
No, I'll probably be in bed by 10:30. So, how about you?
No, we don't usually do anything crazy. Texas A&M's bowl game. My wife went to Texas A&M. Their bowl game is New Year's Eve this year, so we'll be watching that. I've been tasked with making chili. Oh man, I don't even know. I don't know who they're playing. She would know.
Wow.
She'd probably be mad at me for not knowing. But yeah, I'm not sure who they're playing. I'm trying to find out here as we.
This is going to make me, I don't pay any bit of attention to college football, and you may not know the answer to this either, but wasn't the bowl game that got canceled in the first quarter in Dallas yesterday? Is that right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. The weather was bad here. I mean, it was like raining sideways. It was going crazy. They're playing NC State, by the way.
Okay.
So I don't know how good NC State is.
What bowl is that?
I don't even know what the bowl game is. Oh, it's the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. There we go. I remember back in the day when we were going to bowl games and my dad was at IU. It was just nice names like the Peach Bowl and the Liberty Bowl.
Now everything has like eight sponsors and
the
Tax Slayer Bowl. I mean, come on.
I know.
I think we need to get a consolidation of bowl games. Maybe that can be a...
Or maybe we should sponsor a bowl game. The Inside the Hall Assembly Call Bowl. Let's call it the Hoosier Bowl. We'll just have an open invite for Indiana every year, whether they get to six wins or not.
Yeah. It'd be nice for Indiana to get to a bowl game with a little bit more consistency, but
it would. Yes, it would. All right. Well, on that note, once we start talking about football, we know it's time to close up the podcast because we have no insight to add.
we'll talk to everybody football. Next year.
Yes, we will. When are we going to do the next episode? I guess we'll do it before. We'll do it before the Illinois game because the Illinois game is on Thursday. So, yeah, so we'll talk to you before Illinois, probably on Tuesday, and look ahead to Big Ten play because it starts and then it's going to be relentless all the way until March. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and Illinois is...
They're 106th in KenPom right now. They just lost by 16 to Missouri. Their best win is over 116th ranked East Tennessee State, and they are 4-8 on the year. Now all their losses are, you know, decent in terms of who they've played against. Georgetown's their worst loss. They're 113th. But
yeah,
the second year jump under Brad.
Things aren't going there. Things are not going well there. When you look at football and basketball as a whole, they got Lovie Smith. I think they just extended him, which I was like kind of scratching my head as to what they were doing. And then Brad Underwood. You know, I think all of us talked about the trio of coaches coming in, Chris Holtman, Archie Miller, and Brad Underwood, and thought, you know, that all three would be really good fits. And so far, it's only been two of the three so far. So it'd be interesting to see kind of how he's able to turn around. But it's looking like a cold, cold winter in Champaign.
Yes. Yes, it is. All right, everybody. Enjoy your New Year's, and we will talk to you next week on another brand new edition of Podcast on the Brink. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.